gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tierlawn Country Life. Gardens are our second nature, with 15 garden centres nationwide.
Now with me is Chelsea gold medal winner Dermot Gavin, who's joined us here in Aviva. Dermot, good morning.
Morning. Great to
now,
be here.
When I said an Irishman who's transformed English gardens, everyone says, that's Dermot Gavin. But you're talking about an earlier version of yourself.
No, somebody who really had an effect maybe 150 years ago, and that effect has still been, his ideas are up to the minute now.
So who was this man?
His name was William Robinson. The style of gardening that he kind of perfected and promoted is known as Robinsonian. He was from Kilmeaden in County Waterford, but so little is known about his early life, or indeed his private life.
Well, tell us how he got the start.
He got the start through working for the Marquis of Waterford at Curramore. So as a teenager, he worked there in the garden from dawn to dusk. He maintained really elaborate high-maintenance planting. So in Victorian times, everybody wanted carpet bedding and new exotic plants that had come in from maybe South Africa. And these were all very regimented blocks of colour.
Manicured lawns,
really
topiary, obviously. Absolutely. Extreme topiary.
So he worked there first, and he would have to look after the greenhouses, and then he moved on to Ballycullavan in County Laois, did a similar job there, and one evening, it says, now nobody knows whether this story is true, he stormed out after a row with his employer and left the hothouse fires to die down overnight. This was in the middle of winter. He opened all the windows and he killed the entire collection of delicate tropical plants.
That needed the heat to stay alive.
That needed the heat. And he absconded it and went off to London, where he joined the team of the Royal Botanical Society in Regent's Park in London.
Now, he had an intro there, didn't he? Yeah, someone from Glasnevin actually gave him an intro.
Yes, that's right. He was kind of, even though he was around the time of the potato famine, he still had, he was maybe slightly better got than most people. He was a Protestant, his father was a land agent, so they had some connections. And yes, the director of the Botanic Gardens in Dublin gave him an introduction into London. When he started in Regent's Park, though, he would have been doing much the same work. So it would have been carpet bedding. It would have been that high Victorian style. And he was against it in Ireland. And when he got to Britain, he was certainly against it.
So how does a young fella from Waterford start to influence the high and mighty of the English garden?
He hated what he saw. That was endless rows of what we still do in some places today, red salvias, blue lobelias and elaborate carpet bedding. So he took up his pen, and he was an incredible writer, a brilliant writer. And he started writing for the Gardener's Chronicle and began to publish books and began to travel. And his writing was lapped up. So he was an influencer in that way, rather than like Gertrude Jekyll, who he would go on to promote and know and work with. He didn't create many gardens. He wrote about gardening.
He wrote about gardening, and then how did he become so influential that people started saying, I've got to get the next edition of whatever magazine he was writing for because I like what I'm hearing?
Because he was a fighter. He was a revolutionary, but he was a fighter. He was a brilliant writer. He released a book in 1870 called The Wild Garden, and that was a manifesto calling for a new way of planting that embraced native plants. He wasn't against imports, but he was against imports that had to be grown in hothouses. So just through his writing, and then eventually, 3 years after that, he launched a weekly magazine called The Garden, and that really had influence.
Now, was it because it made gardening a bit easier, you know, that if you're not looking for those manicured beds and everything having to be just so, that you could let things run a little bit wild?
It was a little bit of that, but there was a looseness to it, and also there was common sense to it. His ideas were you would go to a lakeside or a riverside and see, or a woodland, and see how the plants sat naturally. And then you would use complementary species and recreate that wherever wherever you were creating a garden, and you didn't need the resources of tons of gardeners to keep the boilers of hothouses going right the way through the night, and you didn't even need the hothouses.
Okay, because most of the plants were native plants and therefore evolved.
Yes, and the ones that weren't, that had been brought in, and he had travelled extensively, the ones that had been brought in were hardy, so they would survive winter in Britain and Ireland.
Now, did he become involved with the Jekylls of the world?
He certainly did. She presented herself at the office of the garden early in her career. He wasn't fond of women, but he made an exception for her. He saw brilliance there, and they became great mates. He commissioned her to write in his magazine, and initially commissioned photography from her. She was also well-travelled in her 20s. She had been all around the place, to Egypt, to parts of Africa, and whatever. She had seen plants grown in the native environment, so she had echoed what he had done.
Did he have an interest in ecology? I mean, was he concerned about how insect life and bird life would interact with his gardens?
I think he did have an interest, but the real benefits of that were kind of a byproduct to the style. So we would think of him, he's known as the wild gardener these days, and he would be known as a kind of rewilding person, I suppose, but his interest was in garden style firstly and foremostly. But also, he knew if you didn't have those insects, if you didn't have the bees, you wouldn't be able to cross-pollinate the plants.
Now, did he, as many of these famous names did he develop his own garden? I mean, did he have property?
He did. He made a lot of money through his books. So at one stage in his career, he was writing lots of books about different styles of gardens from around the world, and he brought Grave Tye Manor, which was a medieval manor house with about 1,000 acres in Suffolk. It hadn't got 1,000 acres, but he kept adding to it. He set a team of gardeners there, a head gardener, and that's the one garden he really created.
Now, he died in 1935, but he was 96 years of age, so he had a long life, I suppose a testament to the gardening life.
Yes, absolutely.
Which you were enjoying. But he therefore had to live through the First World War as quite an older gentleman during the First World War. Did the estate survive, I wonder, that experience?
The estate eventually...
Because, shortage of manpower to keep it going and all of that.
At that stage, it did, but it certainly then afterwards went into this repair, because everything changed after. We talked about this when we talked about the Lost Gardens of Heligan, and the priorities in life for people coming back from the trenches were very, very different, and they weren't going to work for a pittance. But William Robinson in gardening circles was a superstar back then, so his estate certainly would have been looked after.
Okay, how is it today? Is it still there?
It has been through the ups and downs. The hotel has been through the ups and downs, but it's certainly still there. There's a brilliant now head gardener in gardening in the way that William Robinson would have loved, and many groups go and see it.
You have pictures and so on you will make available through your social media.
Instagram, yeah.
Very good. Dermot Gavin, thank you very much for joining us.
Gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tyrlone Country Life. Gardens are our second nature, with 15 garden centres nationwide.